radioalbion.com.
Well, that's the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines and corner scenes to footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
Hello and welcome to the Radio Albion Roundtable. Today's date is Monday the 11th of January 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. You lucky, lucky listeners, you've got a second roundtable in just 3 weeks. And that means that I have with me today Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson and Grandpa Dan. Grandpa, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's always a pleasure to get to sit down with such an esteemed group. Dr. Johnson, of course, it's always a pleasure. Love Dr. Johnson's work. And of course, you, Sir Longshanks, I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but King Dan knighted you, I believe, is on my last show. So you are now Sir Longshanks. So congratulations on your knighthood and wear it with pride. So yeah, no, it's great to be here.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I quite like that title, Sir Longshanks. Matt, how are you doing today? Great to see you once again.
Well, it's a pleasure. Right back at you there, Grandpa. As far as a knighting is concerned, I thought that was done already. I thought that was old news. But I think our listeners are going to be slightly taken aback by the topics that we cover today. So that's really the most exciting part of this whole thing.
Well, yes, once again, we are going back to our old format where each one of us brings a new story to the table. We have a loose theme today, sort of, which is children's TV. And the first news story that I've got today comes from Denmark, and it's about a new children's TV show that features a character with a long, unruly penis, if you can believe that. And I'll just read this news report here. A kids' TV character called John Dillermand has gone viral after he appeared in a Danish children's TV show. The animated show, which is made by the Danish equivalent of the BBC, called DR Ramachang, revolves around the life of the title character and reveals how his extra-long penis gets him into all kinds of trouble. Dillermand roughly translates to penis man in English. The stop-and-go animation has a jaunty theme tune and features the title character getting into all kinds of trouble because of his extraordinary penis. It appears to poke out of the bottom of his red and white striped outfit and is the same colour and pattern as said outfit. In one episode, his neighbour chops off the end with garden shears when it appears in a bush. In another, he fends off a lion with his member, saving local children. Subtitles include, "He can swing it around, he can get a little embarrassed." There's even a theme tune that apparently brags there's nothing he can't do with his penis. From taming lions to flying about like a helicopter with his penis, John Dillermand has attracted criticism as well as praise. Well, I can't think why. Some feel it panders to paedophiles, while others feel it is inappropriate, given the recent hashtag MeToo movement. But DR has swept aside all such complaints. "We want to stay out of that hashtag MeToo. The series is made for our target audience, consisting of children aged 4 to 8, and it must be at their level. The series is not about sexualizing the body," said Morten Skov Hansen, the head of DR Ramachang. "Whatever the viewpoint, it seems to be immensely popular, at least by viewing numbers. During the weekend alone, almost 90,000 people have seen the first episode." And I bet listeners really just can't believe their ears here. A children's TV show about a giant penis with a life of its own that gets the owner into trouble. And they tell us that this is okay because it's not sexualizing the body. And that's, I find that to be really shocking. That's the most shocking thing about this, because it means that children aren't going to associate the penis with anything sexual. And it means that if somebody abuses them or whatever, they're just going to think, oh, that's okay. That's okay, they can do that. John Dillermand does things like this. And the fact that this is aimed at children aged 4 to 8, you can just imagine the little boys in the class getting their bits out and running around the class and trying to copy the things that John Dillermand does. I mean, whoever thought this up has to be absolutely insane. And another point to this that I was going to bring up later, but I'll just bring it up now as well. I mean, this reminds me of an adult cartoon character from 30 years ago. 30 years ago, we had a comic over here in Britain called Viz, and it was the edgiest adult comedy that there actually was. And we had a comic character in Viz that was called Buster Gonad. And this is from a write-up on Buster Gonad. Buster Gonad is a cartoon character in the British comic Viz. The strip involves the surreal adventures of the boy with the unfeasibly large testicles. During a storm, Buster's gonads were zapped by cosmic rays, which enlarge them to enormous size, so that he needs a wheelbarrow to carry them around. As a result, they are impossible to conceal, and are therefore out on open display for everyone to see and marvel at. The plot lines vary, but were always bizarre, revolving around Buster's outstanding physical attributes being a blessing or a curse. For example, in one episode, Buster climbs a tree, whereupon some children standing below mistake his hairy scrotum for giant horse chestnuts, deciding to pelt it with sticks and stones in order to knock it down so they can play conkers. Moments later, a passing farmer attempts to help the children by blasting the horse chestnuts with his double-barreled shotgun. Finally, an endangered species of bird decides to build a nest on Buster's scrotum and lays eggs in it. It is illegal to disturb the rare bird's nest, so poor Buster is forced to stay up the tree for the next few weeks until the eggs hatch and the fledglings have left the nest. As I say, 30 years ago, that was adult comedy, and now exactly the same thing is being shown to children aged between 4 and 8. Instead of having giant testicles, as Buster Gonad has, they have this John Dillamand with this giant penis. I mean, it's just a recipe for disaster. And I always thought quite highly of the Danes. They seem to have they seem to be quite based in their immigration policy and in looking at the ethnic numbers to do with crime. But as far as sexualizing children is concerned, I think they could be just about the worst in Europe. What are your thoughts on this, Grandpa? I bet you've never heard anything like it, have you?
No, this is such a serious society we live in. I love how their justification of this is, don't worry, this doesn't have anything to do with hashtag Me Too. It's okay. This is designed for children 4 to 8. And apparently that's supposed to be like, we're supposed to take this serious. Like, oh, well, okay then, as long as this isn't about, you know, I mean, because hashtag Me Too, what was this about? Grown adult women, basically, in Hollywood doing sexual favors to get movie roles or whatnot. But, you know, don't worry, it doesn't have anything to do with that. This is aimed for children 4 to 8. So you see, it's okay. As I guess you could say, pun intended, it was very ballsy of them. But I just find it utterly remarkable about what an unserious society this is. We look at societal collapse happening all over the Western world, and this is the sort of nonsense. I mean, this is just, you know, you can dismiss it and say, well, it's just a TV show. But a TV show, this is all a reflection of the society at large. I mean, you know, people, you know, say, well, you know, we need to protect our society. We need to save our societies. But for what? You know, I mean, we can sit here and do show after show after show about how bad all of this immigration from the Middle East and Africa is. And that's true and all. But at the same time, one can't help but wonder, well, the society you do have, what are you doing with it? And things such as this are apparently, you know, I mean, this is the example. This is what we're doing with our society. Are we creating nice, you know, art? Are we doing, you know, you look at the beautiful architecture and things from the past. And what are we getting? We're getting this sort of utter and complete nonsense. It's supposed to be funny. And I don't see anything funny about it. I mean, it's just potty humor. It's just toilet humor. There's nothing, I mean, there's nothing original here. Oh, look, he has a big penis. Funny. I mean, it's just another version of the movie Idiocracy coming to real life. And it's just, I find it breathtaking that this is supposedly a serious society that we have, you know, and in the West in general. And it's observably not so.
Well, I mean, just to break it down a bit, I mean, the main thing that they're trying to say with this is there's nothing he can't do with his penis. I mean, I'm just staggered that they would think that this is okay to show to children. This Buster Gonad that I was referring to, I mean, that is sort of a satire on children's comics where someone gets zapped by a cosmic rays and he turns into Spider-Man, where you have this adult satire. Someone gets zapped by cosmic rays and their testicles grow to unfeasibly large size. But that's adult humor. This shouldn't be aimed at children, and you can just see what the results of it are going to be. Some pervy old man, do you want to see my John Dillermand? I'm John Dillermand, I can do this. I mean, it's just incredible that they could show this to children. I mean, recently they've been showing naked adults as well to children and transsexuals. I it can only be a certain while until they actually have live sex shows that they will be showing in front of children, and they'll use the excuse that this is to teach children not to be ashamed or not to be guilty of their private parts. They're going about this all completely in the wrong way. These children should be told to watch out for things like this. Watch out for adults that are doing things like this, talking about things like this, because they're going to be the ones that are going to be a danger to them. Matt, what do you make of this news story?
Well, on the one hand, you know, I feel a certain level of vindication with some of this. But on the other hand, this is a gigantic risk that these guys are taking. Just like what happened a few days ago, you push a population harder and harder and harder, there's going to be a reaction, and that reaction is probably going to be nasty. There's no doubt in my mind that the criticism of this is being centered over there. And the very fact that all this person thinks he needs to do is just deny the claim against him, giving no evidence, simply uttering the words, that that's sufficient to cut off all kinds of criticism against what he's doing, shows you the level of comfort that they have, which may be a misplaced comfort. What sort of character what does John Dillermand look like? He's is he you know what does he look like? I mean,
he looks like a French onion seller, actually. He's got like a stripy shirt on, but he's tackles stripy as well. And he's got like a handlebar moustache, if that's helps you to imagine him.
It does not, but I'd rather not imagine him at all. I've not heard of either one, or Buster Gone. I've never heard of that either. So, you know, the point is, there's got to be a point, assuming that, you know, the nuclear family still exists in that part of the world. What parents are going to do? How parents are going to react to this? I also wonder, because you now have such a huge Islamic population there, if there's going to be resistance, it's probably going to be from them. This has happened in the past with some of their libertine policies. The only people who actually came out against it were the recent Islamic arrivals. But this is a huge risk that these people are taking. And if they get away with this, and oh, by the way, is 90,000, is that a lot of people over there?
I guess that must have just been on YouTube. I was thinking that it must have just been where it was seen on YouTube, because what they're saying is, their excuse for this is that they've got the democratic excuse. They're saying, well, it's perfectly fine because lots of people are watching it. So it's okay. It must be okay because lots of people like it.
Again, I'm not sure 90,000 is a lot of people. And this is, again, this is I assume, because the Danish equivalent of the BBC, meaning this is at least a partially government-funded broadcast corporation. But this is, you know, almost an official institution here. That makes it even worse, where you have where you have this, not just even from the private sector, you have it from the state broadcasting. That would be something like, you know, it'd be like the BBC or any state broadcaster doing this around the world. So this has an official sanction on top of it all. So what they're going to do with the criticisms of this, where the criticisms are going to come from, and what form they're going to take, that's what interests me. I'm pretty certain that they're going to censor a lot of this and make it seem like there's this general public acceptance. Again, I tend to think that the Muslim population is going to be the only one to really fight this with any degree of vehemence.
Well, you're pointing out there that it's funded by the state, and then you have to wonder what the state's education is like for the children. If this is the sort of thing that they think is okay to put on there as entertainment, then what is it they're teaching them in the schools? We know they're teaching them false history, multicultural history. I've seen some of these children's books that talk about them having two male fathers or two mothers being brought up by homosexuals. They're telling them that homosexual marriage is the equivalent of heterosexual marriage, as if there is such a thing as homosexual marriage. This is the sort of stuff that's being taught in the schools, and this is the sort of thing that is being promoted as children's television. I mean, I would just suggest to parents, if they can get away with it, showing them children's television from 30, 40, 50 years ago. We had like a golden age of children's TV over here in Britain in about the 60s and the 70s, and we had a lot of stop motion stuff, things like Bagpuss. Trying to think of the names of Andy Pandy. I guess he wasn't so good. I'm trying to think of these names, these children's television shows that I used to watch. Mr. Ben, Finger Bobs, Noggin the Nog, all these, Ivor the Engine, all these children's programs that were completely innocent. And it, what was important to them was the innocence of children and cherishing that innocence and allowing them to have an imagination to develop. Not in ways like this, not to have them imagining things that they can do with their private parts that they shouldn't be doing, as somebody who is exposing his private parts all the time. And this is just an encouragement for debauchery, basically, and aiming it at children. Grandpa, have you got any other thoughts on this?
Well, you know, I always view these things, I tend to view these things in the big picture of, you know, the larger narrative that goes on. Because if you look at all this sort of stuff as just isolated incidents, I mean, it'll quite frankly drive you insane. But when you look at this in the context of the bigger agenda, we see this constant. I mean, you know, you look at this story by itself and it doesn't really make any sense. But if you look at it in the context of Drag Queen Story Hour, for instance, or this push for, you know, turning children into trannies and all of the other nonsense, and, you know, we've been told Pizzagate's been totally debunked, by the way. You've already alluded to it, Sven. This just desensitizes children where some guy whips his dingus out, or can we call it a tallywhacker? They're supposed to just think, oh, well, it's a game. It's A-OK. And when you look at it in this, it's something much more sinister. I mean, besides the, you know, diabolical lack of humor involved here, it is much more sinister. I'm sorry. It's absolutely, you know, I hate to say it, it's just absolutely evil. And as y'all have already pointed out, the only real pushback here is from the Muslims. And what the hell does that say about us? I mean, you import the Muslims and they're the only ones who are going to stand up and say, no, you're not doing this. Everybody else just quietly, meekly goes along. Why? Because they don't want to be rude. We don't want to be rude. We don't want to point this out. It's okay. It's not about me too. It's aimed for children 4 to 8. Like, that makes it all right. Again, we cannot claim in the Western world to be a serious society when the only people that are going to stand up and say no to this crap are third world people. People that we're supposed to, I guess, think are primitive or something, but at least they've got enough sense to say no to this sort of garbage. I think the conspiracy, you can take any random conspiracy theory and it has more merit than the narratives that are being peddled on us day in and day out. This is absolutely, you know, part of a broader agenda. And when you put it all together, you know, it leads to a very dark place.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the child drag queens there, because that this is the sort of thing that leads to that. And his actual tackle itself, it looks like a candy cane. A striped candy cane. So I think that may have been deliberately done as well. Matt, have you got any other thoughts you'd like to add to this, or would you like to move on to the children's program that you've got for the day?
Yeah, you know, it's not a topic that I relish discussing, because the greatest evil in the world is the destruction of innocence, especially the innocence of children. And it's something that turns my stomach, having raised two boys, to an extent that it's, you know, we said everything that has to be said about it. Let's talk about something also nauseating, although nauseating for a very different reason. And that is Sesame Street, that is now creating two Muppets that are supposed to represent the Rohingya ethnic group in southern Burma. And this is being done in refugee camps in Bangladesh. So Sesame Street unveiled this, and it's supposed to be to tackle the impact of the coronavirus, which is not really hitting them that hard. That's just probably to get grant money, to put it that way. This has been the Burma situation. I'm one of the few people, I think I'm the only person on our side to ever deal with this issue. I developed the concept of Johnson's Law many years ago, writing on the Burmese military government, which I've supported for 25 years now. But these are Noor and Aziz, two twins that are supposed to be speaking the Rohingya language, which, by the way, does not exist. And this is going to be beamed into just a few limited areas of Bangladesh, because apparently they're big Sesame Street fans there. And they must have, God knows how many TVs they have at the refugee camp. So this sounds more symbolic and more for Western suburban soccer moms than anything else. And of course, they make all the typical claims. If you remember, just a few years ago, the cover of Time magazine had a picture of that Buddhist monk, and it said the face of hatred or something like that. And of course, the claim here is that the Rohingya are an actual ethnic group, which they are not, and that they're being cleansed for no reason from the Arkhan or Rakhine state, which is very strategic in Burma. So the woman who's doing this is an absolute, a complete disaster. She used to actually, believe it or not, work for the Bush campaign. She's been ABC News. She's counsel in foreign relations. And her name is Terry Weston. And she's the president of Social Impact at Sesame Workshop. But the situation and the serious part of this is that the Rakhine state is loaded with oil. The Chinese petroleum company is building a huge pipeline, both on land and offshore, connecting this state to China. And it's extremely fertile, and that there is tremendous mineral wealth underneath it. So a few years ago, George Soros in particular got very interested in the Burmese situation. But I mentioned that the Rohingya are not a real ethnic group. Rohingya is a pejorative term come up with by local Buddhists to talk down to these essentially illegal Islamic immigrants from Bangladesh, Bengalis. Now, the Bengalis are a legitimate ethnic group. But because this is an insult, it's something along the lines of claiming that Mexican immigrants to America are wetbacks. And then the press starts talking about the wetbacky nation. And that's how ridiculous it is. It's a completely made up ethnic group. It does not exist. And the language does not exist. But when you see that Sherry Weston was part of the U.S.-Afghan Women's Forum, has been part of the ABC News, I mean, she goes from one elite group to another, and Council on Foreign Relations, she is a part, although a minor part, of the elite attack on that country. The oil issue, the strategic nature of that area, which of course no one knows anything about, is absolutely essential here. And I finally had to go to the only newspaper in English that covers this, which was the New Light of Myanmar, which is the other name for Burma. And they said that, again, this group does not exist. An editorial a few years ago said, I doubt these people really know where the Rakhine state is, although they're loudly denouncing the persecutions of the non-existent race. So this is just a group of people who have gone to Burma from Bangladesh. It's just a pejorative descriptive term, temporary rice field workers. The Muslims, once this pipeline project developed a few years ago, all of a sudden, this happens all over the world, all of a sudden you see the movement for Islamic violence, Islamic militants out of nowhere show up with plenty of money, tremendously able to coordinate attacks on police stations and military installations in the area. And it was just very suspicious because the U.S., through Soros and Radio Free America, the Voice of America radio station, which he bought, wants control of that for themselves. There's billions of dollars under the earth there. So they invented the Rohingya ethnic group and their language. And they're now defending the Islamic militant organizations that have developed there. So they invented stories of ethnic cleansing and everything else. But the Arkhan Rohingya Salvation Army is an extremely violent group that is, of course, run by a foreigner, Atullah Abu Anmar, who's not from the area. He's from Pakistan, and he lives in Saudi Arabia, and is a professional jihadist with, to a great extent, American money. So, and again, these guys, you know, Islam, whether it be from Bosnia, the Philippines, they're very good at PR. And they're good at PR because the United States and the oil industry uses them to destabilize any region where they see new deposits, so oil, gas, and minerals. And so they create these groups, in this case, invented an entire race from whole cloth, and is using them against the Burmese government that the Soros crowd has always hated. If you remember, Burma was a big issue on college campuses about 10 years ago. Out of nowhere, these college kids who knew nothing, so to this day know nothing about the area, suddenly became very militant about overthrowing the military government, which was an explicitly National Socialist government, by the way. And of course, the CIA installed the now infamous chief executive of that country, and she gets a Nobel Peace Prize. And so this is just kind of a bizarre way for the regime to legitimize this attack, to you know, make sense out of this you know, Sorosian militant attack on southern Burma. The fact that trillions of dollars of heroin are coming from some of these areas too, that the government has been fighting, is also very relevant. And I think that's really what George Soros got involved here. So creating these Muppets, you know, is strange because you figure what they're claiming this is going to be beamed into a few refugee camps in Bangladesh. Again, are they big Sesame Street fans there? Are they have a lot of TVs there? I mean, is this a priority for them? And this Weston, having all these elite contacts, this is all, you know, private sector funded, making believe there's something to do with the COVID-19 stuff. This is absolutely ridiculous. The only thing this could be for is to keep alive this. It completely invented, it's almost like a social experiment, this completely invented group of people, which really is just an insult. The term is meant as an insulting name, but because no one knows anything, Johnson's Law being what it is, they could take it, they could invent it, they could create a whole different group of people, claim they're being ethnically cleansed, and no one knows any better. And you should hear these journalists and these professors who doesn't know couldn't show Burma on a map if their life depended on it, going on and on and on about the genocide and how we have to do something about it. And, well, you know, Sesame Street is doing its part by creating two Muppets for a make-believe ethnic group speaking a language, which is just, you know, what they speak in Bengali people in Bangladesh, calling it the Rohingya language. For, you know, very, very specific, very non-innocent elite reasons. Again, using children, they even use the word, they use the phrase transformative power that these Muppets are supposed to do, raising children to believe in all of this and to even become a part of these militant organizations, which is what they're really defending here, all for the sake of driving the Chinese out of this part of Burma. So it sounds very obscure, and it is, except that you have heavy Soros involvement, heavy CIA involvement for decades now. And this is another front of the war against China, which is not obscure, which is deadly serious. And it's just, you know, it's just incredibly cliche They create these make-believe, very, very badly thought out, superficial identities for these kids, or these characters that they've created. The girl, Noor, makes up funny new rules for games. Her brother is a storyteller who's very creative, and that distracts him from his daily tasks and chores and everything else. It's just very, very poorly done. And I think it has more to do with keeping Western people interested in the area rather than, you know, creating a new market in Bangladeshi refugee camps, which I can't imagine have a lot of TVs to beam this into. So the whole thing is absolutely bizarre, and it shows you the different levels of psychological manipulation that the regime engages in for the issues that that interest it. But what makes this unique is that the Rohingya is a brand new, invented, non-existent group, ethnic group. It's a slur. There is no Rohingya language. There is no Rohingya people. But no one knows that. So they invented this to create a new genocide story. Poor Muslims, tons of money, all suspiciously, you know, front page news for a few days. And now Sesame Street, with this woman who is heavily involved in elite circles, in the Bush campaign, as well as liberal campaigns and neocon campaigns all over the world, now promoting this with a big grant from the private sector. So it's bizarre, but it also has a very serious and ominous purpose behind it.
Well, yeah, it seems to be trying to get people to see them as being children as well when they're Islamic militants. I mean, the news story tells us that half of the Rohingya are children. They're just innocent children. Of course, we get told this same story with the invasion force that comes into Europe from the Muslim world. We're told that they're children. Then we find out that some of them are children of the age of 35. I just want to pick up on this bit here that you said, Matt, about where Sesame Street describes what the storyline is. And they have a curious girl who likes to make up funny new rules for games. So she changes the rules of the game. She's a feminist. She's the intelligent one. While her brother is a storyteller whose creativity distracts him from his daily tasks. So the male is a daydreamer who's lazy and doesn't do his daily tasks. And the female comes up with new rules for the games. So they're trying to insert feminism in here as well, trying to subvert the male and the female role. And you do have to question, as you were saying there, Matt, what does Sesame Street have to do with Bangladesh? Does Bangladesh not have their own television programs? Why is Sesame Street involved in this? Why is an American company exporting American ideals around the world like this? I mean, it's bad enough that we have these subversive programs in our own countries, but to then export them to other countries. And this is why we see these same problems appearing in those other countries. This is why we now see a rising divorce rate and problems with rape in India, is because of this exporting of this degenerate liberal culture that we have in the West and exporting that all the way around the world. And again, they go for the children. They go for the innocent children and try to subvert them. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on the Rohingya Muppets?
Well, this is why I love the opportunity to sit down to do a show with Dr. Johnson. I mean, I see that we're getting a story about migrant Muppets, and I wind up learning about, you know, geopolitical politics in Burma and involving the Rohingya. You just never know what you're going to get. And I love it. I really do. I'm not being sarcastic. I absolutely love it. And I always learn something new. It's good stuff. Yeah. Jihadists financed with American money. I was totally taken aback like that with that. You know, who could have ever guessed? You see, you were pointing out, Sven, you know, how these things are taking place because they import these, as I would say, liberal Western things into these other countries. And you see, they're bringing them up to, you know, where we're at as far as the degeneracy and such while they're bringing our society down. It's, you can see this as part of the whole, shall we say, global homo agenda to get everybody worldwide more or less on the same page. You can't have Muslims still having a strong nuclear family and their traditional values if you're going to incorporate those countries into the larger globalist agenda. And so you see these things taking place. You see these countries being all of a sudden filled with this sort of propaganda. And yeah, I think it's amazing. Isn't it just so coincidental that the people behind this all seem to have the same exact credentials? You know, I mean, it just, I guess we're supposed to think that's pure coincidence. And finally, we're supposed to think that this is all because they're concerned about the children. Does anybody really think any of these big children in refugee camps in Burma? Well, no, I mean, you would have to be beyond naive to actually believe that. But yet that's, I guess you would say, the justification being peddled here. And it's worth pointing out, it's the same justification, or it's the same people rather, who are saying all of these draconian laws and lockdowns they're pressing in our countries are because they're worried about you catching the flu. I mean, it's all part of this much larger agenda. You know, you might look at it and say, well, what do I care about, you know, this sort of propaganda being put out in a part of the country that probably 99% of the people can't find on a map? Well, it does matter because you see them trying to get everybody up here on the same plane, on the same level. And I believe that's so they can better more incorporate everybody by a global elite. Now, I know that sounds like something kind of out there and crackpot, but I mean, as crazy as clown world keeps getting, nothing sounds too crazy anymore.
Well, I like the term there, migrant Muppets. They have actually been very accurate with the portrayal of the migrant Muppets. You can see the greasy black hair that we're used to seeing on the ones that turn up on the shores of Europe. But you also brought up the COVID regulations there, Grandpa. I believe your news story today has something to do with these COVID regulations.
Well, yes. My story, I'm the one odd guy out that didn't have anything that was, you could say, you know, kind of along the same theme. And I apologize for that. And also, if I kind of cut in and out for the listeners, I apologize. I'm getting snow where I'm at, and my internet is always kind of sketchy as it is, and any kind of inclement weather. So I don't want anybody to think that Sir Longshanks is falling down on his show quality production or anything such as that. Yes, we have this story here. A New York assemblyman has introduced a bill that would authorize the government to detain people deemed a public health risk amid concerns that the COVID-19 crisis is being allegedly used to usher in a period of authoritarianism. I think I think the cows are already out of the barn with that one. But anyway, Bill A-416, authored by Democratic member of New York State Assembly Nick Perry, calls for the removal and or detention of individuals who are identified as a case contact or carrier of a contagious disease. The sweeping powers envisaged by the bill would be invoked in the event of the state government declaring a health emergency due to an epidemic of any communicable disease. Legislation on the book states that the government must provide clear and convincing evidence that the health of others is in danger before ordering a person or group to be detained. I'm going to get some of this stuff. We're going to narrow some of this down here in a minute. This is just the overall to give everybody an idea of what we're talking about here. It adds that people being removed, that's such a nice term, will have the right to legal representation. That's reassuring. And are allowed to supply the telephone numbers of friends to notify them of the individual's detention. So everyone will know you're in the camp. That'll be good. Perry's bill apparently allows the governor or health official to unilaterally approve such detentions, and a court order is required within 60 days of confinement. What's a couple of months? A judicial review is required if the individual is still in detention after 90 days. In other words, a citizen would be confined to a detention center for up to 60 days without any court review. The Jewish Voice reported citizens that are placed in detention will only be released once health authorities deem that they are no longer contagious. The proposed law states the bill also empowers the governor or relevant health authorities to require people deemed potential health risks to submit to medical examinations as well as undergo a quote, prescribed course of treatment, preventative medicine or medication, or vaccination. So yes, they can force you to be vaccinated. The current legislation, the current iteration of the proposed law will be reviewed by the New York State Assembly's Health Committee on January 6th. Now, a few particulars about it. That's just the quick overview of this story. Few fun details. This assemblyman that has proposed this law, he's from Jamaica. He's Jamaican, and you can go on YouTube and you can find local news interviews from several years back with this guy. And I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be ugly here, but let's just say, in my opinion, he can barely string two sentences together, but yet we're supposed to believe he wrote this law. He wrote this bill, I should say, to put forward with all of this legalese. I couldn't even write this, but this guy supposedly did this. And obviously this thing is long. We're not going to sit here and read a bunch of legalese, but I wanted to just read a few things from the bill itself to point out how vague so much of this is. It says removal and detention of cases, contacts, and carriers who are or may be a danger to public health. Maybe, you see, just you see, they write in that vagary, so it opens up to where, you know, you could be a danger. I mean, if you're going around not wearing a mask, you may be a danger. It might be a stretch of the imagination, but you may be a danger. Upon determining by clear and convincing evidence. Now, we're not told who has to be convinced by this evidence. It's just strictly somebody's opinion. Well, I find that clear and convincing. So the bar has been set. That the health of others is, or once again we see, may be endangered by a case, contact or carrier. Here's another thing. Or suspected case. See, they don't even have to test you. They won't even have to test you. They can just suspect, you know, I suspect you coughed one time. So you could be a carrier of this horrible contagious disease. In the opinion of the governor, after consultation with the commissioner, may pose an imminent and significant threat to the public health, resulting in severe morbidity or high mortality. There it gets fun. The governor or his or her delegee, including but not limited to the commissioner or the heads of local health departments. Now, not limited to any of these. So the governor's secretary could be put in charge of this. It says it's not limited to these people in authority. So they could have some rando in here just say, yeah, I'm now in charge of determining who gets to go into the COVID camp. Now, it continues to get better because not limited to the, so now they move into groups, may order the removal and or detention of such a person or a group of such of persons. So now we've moved to you're an individual who may be spreading this highly dangerous disease around to now you're part of a group that may, in somebody's opinion, we're not sure who, because it's not limited to who's going to be put in charge of this. You could be a group that has been determined to be a public health threat. A few things. This isn't, now somebody could look at this and say, well, this is people being caught up in COVID hysteria. But here's the fact of the matter. This guy has brought this same bill up. This is the fourth time since 2015. This guy has brought this same bill forward and submitted it three prior times since 2015. This is the fourth version of this to be brought forward. It's obvious he didn't think this up alone. Not only did he not write this, but it wasn't his idea. It really highlights how the oligarchy uses these politicians. They're just placeholders. When they want to propose something, they hand it to this guy, put his name on it, and that's how it goes forward. This guy, this Jamaican, didn't come up with this idea. This Jamaican is not suddenly worried about the public health. And it just shows that this whole virus regime that we have going, this whole plan, this forward, trying to slide it in since 2015. So that brings the question of common sense tells you this guy hasn't come up with this idea. This guy isn't dedicated to public health. So who has been pushing this agenda? I think it's a fair question to ask. And obviously the answer is the oligarchy, to use a nice broad term here. And it's all, again, it's all part of a larger agenda. Everybody thinks this COVID nonsense started, you know, last year. And it didn't. Again, this was being put forward. COVID specifically is not mentioned anywhere in the bill. This was being put forward over 5 years ago. This plan has been in the works for quite some time. And yet you still have morons out here running around thinking that this is all about public health. They want to they've got a bill to force you to get vaccinated. But they think that, you know, this is about public health. This is because these people are suddenly worried that you might catch the flu that has a, you know, well over 99% survival rate. I don't understand how people can be so willingly blind. So, you know, you can't even chalk it up to naivety because it's so in your face. And then with just a little digging, I didn't spend hardly any time digging into this and looking into the background of the people involved, of this person involved here, and the fact that this bill, just a few minutes, but most people don't take the few minutes. This is all part of a much larger agenda, but we're supposed to believe that once you get this vaccine, that they have no idea what it's going to do to you long term, by the way, and they're already setting the groundwork to force you to be vaccinated. You're supposed to believe that once that happens, they're going to give up all of this power they have taken. I read an article, and I'll hand it off to y'all here in just a minute, but I read an article, and I didn't include it with this, but it was an article published for psychiatrists or whatever, and it was heavily implied that people that don't want to get these vaccines or question the COVID narrative might actually be mentally ill and, you know, could quite possibly, it's heavily hinted that those people might really need to be institutionalized for their own safety and for the safety of the public at large. And you look at that, and Dr. Johnson did back last summer about one of the Soviet states that had one of these prisons where they did all of these horrible things to what amounts to political prisoners. And I just keep thinking, how can anybody sit here and say, well, can't happen here? They wouldn't do that here. But why wouldn't they? We have people that have marched on the Capitol and did a peaceful political protest, one of which was gunned down in cold blood. And now the media and the politicians are saying these people are terrorists. Joe Biden himself said these people are terrorists, white supremacists, anti-Semites, and thugs. This is demonization. This is dehumanization. They have to dehumanize you for what comes next, because if people see you as a human being, they might stall at what they want to do to you. You are being dehumanized. You're being dehumanized, and they're not doing that for the lulz. They're doing that for what they've got in store next. That's a damper on the mood, isn't it? I'll hand it off to you, Sven, and you can take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, so it looks like what they're doing is they're trying to put people inside for 2 months without habeas corpus, so they can just make an allegation that somehow you're a threat to people's health, and it won't be used for people that are a threat to people's health. Just look at what's going on at the moment. Nancy Pelosi is trying to invoke this article in the Constitution to remove the president from being the president, and the reason that's in the Constitution is if the president has a mental breakdown. If he's not all there, if he suddenly goes senile or he suddenly goes insane, then he can be removed. The government, President Trump hasn't gone insane, and yet they're trying to use that to remove him from power. And this would be exactly the same thing. It's the same as when they claim that people are inciting hatred or they're inciting violence. When they're not inciting violence or hatred, it's just an excuse to use so that they can bring these laws in, so that they can use the weight of the law to silence somebody. And this will just be a way to put people in prison, silence them, threaten them with this. And also, according to this, they could just inject you with whatever they want to inject you with. They could say that your insanity is catching. Other people are catching your insanity, so we need to sedate you. We need to sedate you with these heavy hypnotic drugs to prevent you from being able to think straight. It's just incredible what's going on that is not being talked about in the mainstream press. Matt, what are your thoughts on these COVID camps in New York?
At this point, it's increasingly difficult to put this into words. It says right in here that, but words are absolutely essential. The law does not specifically mention coronavirus. That's not the issue, which is why I'm glad Grandpa brought up that this has been around for a while before the COVID hoax came into existence. Now, I could just picture the kind of middle class moderate Republican sitting at home going, oh, well, they have to provide clear and convincing evidence. And they're allowed a lawyer. And therefore, their fears then get put to rest because basic cognition has completely broken down. You have an advertising regime. You have the creation of markets, all lowest common denominator. Everything is appealing to the basest passions. reason is always being bypassed. And when it gets bypassed too much, it atrophies. Even basic rules of logic have been under attack for a long time. People aren't born knowing how to think clearly. That's something that requires a lot of work and experience. That's long since broken down when you're constantly bombarded by ads that, among other things, that appeal to your basest instincts. But that's how this is going to, if it goes through, that's how it's going to go through. They use the word detention. But detention normally is a technical term referring to someone being punished for something. We know what they can do with, assuming the coronavirus isn't even the issue here. That's how it's being justified. But that's not the issue because it doesn't even mention it. You could be put into the detention center. That's a punishment. That's a jail for 60 days on the unilateral decision of the governor. There is absolutely no legal foundation for that. But we live in an era where legal foundations don't exist. Governors have been ruling by decree for practically a year now. People are getting used to that. People actually think that's a law. But the legislature has minimal has nothing to do with creating all of these. The emergency powers that governors have taken do not exist in the legislation. They simply do exactly what they please. Now that's normal. So because they get legal representation, which means they have to put a $5,000 retainer on a lawyer, but I'm not really sure what the argument would be. Either have it or you don't. Either a threat or you don't. I mean, that's not a legal issue. That would be a medical or ideological issue. And even there, it's just even if you might pose this, terms like health or public health could refer to a lot of things. The medical profession is already talking about ideological deviance being a threat to public health. But Grandpa, I'm happy Grandpa said this because it's the first thing that popped into my head was how the Soviets used from the Khrushchev era on their own psychiatric establishment to throw hundreds of thousands of dissidents in mental institutions. In fact, that's really one of the main ways in the Khrushchev era of how dissidents were treated and pumped up with all kinds of experimental drugs. Never heard from again. And even there, they said the same thing. Well, yes, they have representation there. You know, a doctor has to sign off on it, which is all meaningless. This has nothing to do with the virus. It says right in there. It's a detention center, so this is about punishment. And this is something the governor can do for 60 days. The 60 days, you're not going to work. 60 days, you're not paying rent. 60 days, you're not with your kids. It's absolutely just really could break a man who's sent here. And I'm pretty sure this is going to be immediately used for ideological dissidents. The term public health is going to be stretched beyond recognition. And there won't be any, you know, it'll be the cases will be processed so quickly. No one will have any idea what's going on. They're not going to understand the niceties of this law. And what legal representation, what lawyer knows about this? They're going to have to read this law very quickly and suddenly know how to, what cases are they going to refer to? This is unprecedented. There are no cases. The legal representation is absolutely meaningless and expensive. They're not going to provide you a lawyer. But because they put these absolutely mindless slogans in to calm down the suburbanites in upstate New York, they're going to go, okay, this is where we still live under the rule of law, which of course hasn't existed in a long time. So this is a tremendous symptom of the cancer that eats away at the American mind, which now has reached almost infantile levels. The old zombie metaphor, it actually really exists here, and you're not going to see substantial resistance, except maybe from some of our people. But again, like in the Rohingya case and the Dutch case, you push and you push and you push and you push, and these people get shot when something happens. But you're talking about 60 days of confinement by governor's order with minimal evidence that doesn't even the Supreme Court always says a vague law is not a law, but all of these laws or these decrees are vague. There is, these are this unprecedented, so there can be no legal representation. These are punishment centers. When you get, those who have got COVID for the most part are okay. Trump was okay in what, 4 days? So what's the 60-day thing all about? So this whole thing is laughable. And most people will have no idea what this law is. And once it gets passed, if it gets passed, it'll be quickly forgotten and people will be put away for this. And our people will probably be the first ones to go. This is probably the worst example of this of the regime that I've seen so far.
Well, they always make the definitions nebulous, don't they, so that they can end up expanding them. And it's another instance of them making use of the COVID-19 scare to get through legislation that they possibly wouldn't be able to get through before. I mean, you're saying their grandpa, they've tried to get it through four times before or three times before, and this is the fourth time. And this time they may very well be lucky because we've got this COVID-19 scare at the moment. So people are going to be thinking, oh, yes, well, that makes sense. We don't want people to be spreading this deadly doom flu around. We need these quarantine camps. And then once that law is in place, it can then be used for the ideological dissidents, as you're pointing out there, Matt. Have you got any other thoughts on this grandpa or on anything else that we've been talking about today?
Well, I'm glad Dr. Johnson brought up the absurdity of having you can have legal representation. For what? I mean, the problem is the law itself. I mean, what's the lawyer going to say? Well, they're following the rules. Enjoy your stay at Camp COVID. And just for an example, when they passed, look at the FISA courts. Remember when they came up with that, the FISA court, why they were going to be able to issue these secret warrants to spy on you, you know, because that was supposedly going to keep us safe from the terrorists that supposedly did 9/11. And how did that wind up? We know now that the Hillary Clinton campaign to spy on the Trump campaign and nothing happened. And if they will do it at that level, what do people like you and I, what chance do we have? They've intentionally, as Dr. Johnson points out, they intentionally have written the law so vague that they can use this whole thing is just full of maybe or by the discretion of what could be. There's not even anything that says they have to test you for whatever disease they're saying you're a danger of. So they can just suspect that you are. And yes, it's 60 days, but then it extends to 90 days and they have to get a court order. These FISA courts basically rubber stamped an obvious made up deal to spy on the Trump campaign. Does anybody seriously think they won't rubber stamp keeping these dangerous dissidents who could be spreading misinformation about the COVID that could endanger the public? It'll be rubber stamped. So it goes beyond 60 days or 90 days. They'll ultimately keep you in there indefinitely. No, you know, and they can force you to be vaccinated or give you whatever. We have no idea what these vaccines hold in them. They are no long-term studies. Why did they have to pass laws that say you can't sue the pharmaceutical company if you have ill effects from it? It's all sinister. It's all part of the larger agenda. And even though this story kind of sticks out as being different from the ones y'all brought, it really all does go together. This is all a part of the larger globalist agenda. And it winds up with all of us, all the little people, basically global peasantry being ruled over by a small group of elite oligarchs.
Matt, have you got any final thoughts on today or on what Grandpa was just mentioning there?
It seems that one of the things that all of these stories and similar stories all have in common is that they really rely on public ignorance. Not just public ignorance, but public apathy. And the fear that now anyone has of doing anything, petrified they're going to go away. They're going to be called terrorists. They're going to be called a racist on the internet or something like that and then lose their job. That's what all of these things have in common. Even, you know, intelligent people, with, you know, normal jobs and normal lives really don't have the wherewithal to put together a cogent attack on this stuff. They simply don't own it. You know, this article on the COVID camp, this will be forgotten. And then when it does get passed, people will not know what's going on. People have short memories. They don't understand the implications of all this stuff, and the contempt that the contempt that the regime shows, that a few slogans of vague reassurances, that's going to be enough to shut them up. Is, you know, again, shows how isolated they are, how that they know nothing about ordinary people, how they hate them. That will throw them a few bones and you know, they'll shut their mouths. They don't really understand any of this anyway. The COVID relief bill having all this, you know, thousands of pages that no one has any idea what they're voting on. They couldn't possibly read all of this. Everyone, you know, putting laws in there that they could never get passed normally, having them as writers on a COVID relief bill, and then the press will say anyone who's opposed to it is opposed to relief, is, again, typical of how American liberalism works. Everything they do is based on deceit. Everything they do is based on the barrel of a gun. And so this year, you know, we're seeing blatantly that they're not even justifying this anymore. They're ruling by brute force. And they have so many weapons at their disposal. But the risk that they're all taking is that enough people lose their jobs, enough people have nothing more to lose, they're then in a lot of trouble. Because, you know, it used to be that suburbanites have a nice home, they have a good job, they have families, they really can't do much. Well, if that's going away, that means you have a lot of pretty smart, educated people with absolutely nothing to lose. And that's very, very dangerous for the regime.
Yeah, I think the problem is we're programmed to obey authority. We're programmed to look to the authority because the authority knows best, because those who are in authority should be the very best people. It should be the very, very best people that rise to the top. And it would be, I think, if we didn't have usury in our systems. Usury means that people rise to the top that aren't there through their creativity. They're there through greed. They're not there through having created things. They're there through having siphoned off wealth from everybody else. And that corrupts the whole system. And those of us who do spot what's going on, we don't want to appear out of the crowd. We don't want to be the nail that pops its head up, because it's going to get hit with the hammer. So people, you know, the social pressure on people not to conform is immense. But at least there are more and more people that are willing to speak out now. And I think with Biden calling half the population of America domestic terrorists for supporting Trump, I think we're going to see more and more people that have enough courage to speak up about these things. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back with more roundtables later on in the year. And of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.
Well, that's the round table. We dance when we're able. We do routines, record a scene, to footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.